Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I wonder what the life of like a far left ideologue is like. You know, I picture it that they wake up in their parents' basement, of course. So, you know, the light doesn't wake them up from the window because there's no light in the basement. But somehow they wake up. Maybe it's their mom shouting, "Breakfast is ready," or something like that. And they get out of bed and they put on their favorite kind of black outfit. And then they, you know, there's a pile of dirty clothes in the corner. And they start to go through it to figure out how they're going to complement their black outfit, like what kind of armband they're going to wear, you know? And so they're digging through and they're like, "Oh, Palestine, no, that's so yesterday. Oh, BLM, nah, it's like 2020. Oh, let's see here. Maybe. I'll set that to the side. Let's see. Mexico, no, that was last week. And then they find the one, the Iranian flag armband. They're like, "That's the one today." And then they march out proudly, thinking that they're more righteous than everyone else. "Don't bomb Iran." That's got to be what their life is like. I just want to see their closet. I want to see their closet of accoutrement. Whatever the issue of the day is, they've got a flag for that. They've got a symbol for that. There was multiple protests over the weekend from the normal folks who apparently they were able to set aside their hatred for ICE long enough to be able to talk about their hatred for the United States for literally saving the planet and disabling Iran's nuclear capabilities. Shama Sawant, who's now running for Congress, was out there. "No war on Iran. End the genocide. End all U.S. military funding to Israel." She's fine, of course, with genocide as long as it's directed at Jewish people. But any other self-defense, anything else, absolutely genocide is bad. Seattle, "Stop the war on Iran. Trump is a war criminal." They had a protest at Westlake Park. So it's like they will find anything. They will absolutely find anything, even if it's stopping nuclear capabilities of the single biggest sponsor of global terrorism. They're like, "Yeah, I'm going to protest against that." So that's new. So maybe this will distract them from, I don't know, assaulting journalists and ICE long enough for them to focus on Iran. I don't know. In the meantime, the feds are becoming increasingly committed to holding Antifa accountable for its violent actions in recent weeks. More so Antifa in Portland, of course. They still, for some reason, don't acknowledge Seattle's existence. So there was some violent clashes in Portland between, of course, the regular Antifa folks and the ICE agents at an ICE facility where they had been protesting for several days. Things got pretty violent. Even ahead of this weekend, you'll recall that the feds had already brought, and the Department of Justice had already brought some federal cases against Antifa rioters in Portland. And what happened over the weekend has only added to that. And I gotta say, I saw the article from the Post Millennial, and they did a pretty good job at outing some of these Antifa militants. They look exactly like you'd think they look. If I asked Grok, "Hey, create a fake news article where you have pictures of Antifa rioters who got arrested and just make them like quintessential," right? This is exactly what they would look like. That's exactly what when I see the black block, I'm like, I know that's what they look like underneath it. What is with the lipstick one? That's a fetish type thing. That's very strange. And somebody had to have blue hair. There had to have been a blue-haired militant in there somewhere. So in this latest round of charges, it includes assaulting federal police officers, refusing to comply with police orders, blinding officers with high-powered lasers, and attempting to trap federal agents inside the ICE facility. And, you know, you might say, well, they were just barricading. Well, look what they did at CHOP in Seattle in the summer of 2020. Is they tried to quick cement doors closed on the precinct that they'd taken over. There were officers inside of it, and then they tried to light it on fire. So as stupid as they look, these are absolute violent extremists. They should be treated like terrorists. I'm glad the federal government is doing something at least about what's happening in Portland. I think there's been a lot of missed opportunities to be able to do something with Antifa here. I continue to hope the federal government gets involved in what's happening in Seattle. So that being said, I want to play really quickly before I get to our main story of the day, where I'm bringing some receipts on some stuff I've been ranting and raving about. So we had a fantastic interview yesterday on Sundays with Subscribers with the president of the Seattle Police Guild. So the union that represents Seattle police officers, Mike Solon, is the president of that union. And I wanted to talk to him about, you know, comparing and contrasting what happened in 2020, sort of how his officers are doing. They're very short-staffed right now. But also, why are we seeing, for citizens who are like, why are these rioters allowed to run rampant down at the federal building every night with little to no consequence, vandalizing things, being violent, assaulting a journalist? And there doesn't really seem to be a heavy hand or any hand at all being utilized by Seattle leadership or the Seattle Police Department. So we talked a lot about that, and I'm going to get to more on that in a moment. But there's one part of this interview that really sticks out to me. I posted it on social media last night and tagged like the who's who of the federal government in it. So, and I've worried about this behind the scenes, but part of me thought, well, maybe that's a ridiculous concern. They can't possibly be that politically motivated in Seattle. But I would be wrong. So Mike Solon brought up the fact that it's only a matter of time before some of the violence that we've seen in places like Portland and New York and California that's been directed at ICE agents comes to Seattle. And by that, I mean, you know, not the rioting and the vandalism outside buildings, etc., but ICE agents who are out there trying to conduct lawful immigration efforts. You know, we know that these ICE agents have been doxxed. I mean, right now, as we speak, there are signs with some of their faces, you know, plastered on billboards on Capitol Hill in Seattle and down the Tacoma area with their home addresses on them. And we know that things have gotten pretty hostile elsewhere, where you have a legitimate ICE enforcement effort. And then you get this mob that shows up because they've heard that something is in the works, and they either threaten or harass or intimidate or even assault these ICE agents. So Mike Solon went to the new Seattle police chief, worried about this happening here. And he wanted to know from the police chief, look, first and foremost, are we going to be there to help these ICE agents if their lives are in jeopardy? And if we, and of course we're going to do that, but will the city and the police chief and the mayor have our officers' backs on the back end? Here's that part of the conversation.
If and when, and I think when is going to happen soon, when federal ICE agents get overwhelmed in an arrest, particularly in the Seattle area, and those Fed agents call for help on our radio, you better believe police officers are going to be responding to help them defend themselves for a safety component.
Are you going to be allowed to?
That's why I asked him. I said, you need to put messaging out to your employees that gives them clear, concise guidelines of what the rules of engagement are. Because I can tell you, our oath of service should be apolitical. We defend each other regardless of politics. Even if you're an Antifa member who's getting their ass kicked by somebody, cops should intervene to save their lives, to protect them. Same thing of a normal citizen, we would intervene. Even if a federal ICE agent is overwhelmed, getting in a fight, we must, as cops, to uphold our oath, go help that person. But I know that if that happens, and it's coming, I guarantee you it's coming. It happened in Rochester, New York. There's the delineation that we need clarification from him so we, as cops, don't get thrown under the bus politically.
Have you received that clarification?
So far, not yet.
Has not received that clarification. Wouldn't that be a very easy, yes, we'll put that in writing. Here's what we're going to do if people are attacking ICE agents physically while they're out on the job in our state or in our city. Isn't it insane we even have to have that he even has to have that concern for the rank and file of the Seattle Police Department, and that we even have to talk about that? Because, of course, you know how the media will spin it, and you know how the leftist activists will spin it, is, oh, I thought the Seattle Police Department didn't cooperate in deportation efforts. So they'll act as if the Seattle Police Department was there trying to get illegals out of the country when they're just there trying to protect the lives of federal agents who are doing a lawful duty within our state boundaries. So I'm glad that Mike brought that up. I think it's a scary situation because it could happen at any moment. And of course, city leadership will be this quick to throw an officer under the bus, even if they were saving an ICE agent from being killed, because that is the state of affairs here. And really along the West Coast, it's incredibly insane. The other issue I addressed with Mike Solon is this issue of staffing. SPD is down like what, 600-700 officers? And much of that has happened after the summer of love here in 2020. So after we had, you know, the riots in 2020, the takeover of Chaz Chop, which I would argue the Seattle Police Department wasn't even staffed up enough to deal with that. But now we're down 600-700 officers. There's like a riot every night over something. And it's only checks notes June 23rd. So we have a long, long summer ahead of us. And so Mike Solon and I talked about, you know, even if the political will wasn't a problem, like, let's say the city had the political will to deal with these left-wing violent extremists. Do we even have the officers to carry that political will out?
Do you even have the ability to respond in the way that you'd need to respond?
No.
To like a CHOP situation?
No.
So what do you do then? Mutual aid?
You make it up as you go.
Okay, great. I mean, but seriously.
Okay, use Cal Anderson as the example.
Yeah, with the Christian rally.
Mm-hmm. Their first intent was to put a bike fence, those crowd control fences up as a dividing line. And it took, what, 30 seconds for that to get dismantled?
Yeah.
Then now they had to actually use human beings, police officers, as that fence support.
Yeah.
And then so if you removed our ability to use less lethal tools in the quick manner that we should use them in to protect ourselves and to protect both warring factions, if you will, then we're making it up as we go. And we're the cannon fodder.
And it's dangerous.
It's extremely dangerous. We had how many cops that day were put into the hospital? Three? I mean, Brandy, I say this all the time. We don't have enough cops to answer the basic patrol call. Every shift, every precinct, we're below minimums. Below. I mean, this is my pitch. You can make so much money in the Seattle Police Department right now. There's so much overtime to be made. So it's hard to like criticize what's going on because, man, this is the time to make money. But you get so overwhelmed and you understand that if you make one false action that's optically bad, you're done.
Yeah, and he said, we're making it up as we go along. I mean, that's not what you want to hear. Not that it's his fault. That's not what you want to hear when it comes to like the potential for another summer of love. They don't have enough police officers. It's been obvious as I've been out there that they don't have enough police officers. They're far outnumbered. They can't really do anything with the violent mob because there's more of the violent mob than there is of them, and it's not even close. That full interview with Mike Solon is up now on Sundays with subscribers. You can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. So I have complained a lot about the moral hypocrisy of the media when it comes to them picking and choosing what kind of political violence that they're going to cover. And this is a very true thing, but I understand, and you should be skeptical of everything you hear or read, even if it's on this show and you think I'm trustworthy, you should want the receipts. And so I'm going to bring you the receipts today. I actually have another story on in this regard tomorrow. So it's going to be sort of a back-to-back day of bringing the receipts. So of course, by now, you've probably seen the video of independent journalist Cam Higby being assaulted by Antifa last weekend and me being assaulted by Antifa last weekend as well. Here's a clip.
No!
So what happened to Cam Higby, punched repeatedly in the head outside the federal building in downtown Seattle, and then what happened to me, assaulted, sprayed with wasp killer in the eyes outside Homeland Security facility south of Seattle in the city of Tukwila. And we've talked a lot about it. And look, like, I don't need special treatment. I don't expect there to be special wall-to-wall coverage on all the local TV stations about this. But I expect the treatment to be fair. And the reality is that the attacks on us are a relevant part of the story of what's happening and how violent these far-left militants have become. And so the argument that I've made, remember, and people will call it a hypothetical, right? If this had been, what was the comparison I made last week? If this had been a member of the Proud Boys or a far-right militant who assaulted a mainstream journalist, the news coverage of it would be completely different. Every news station in town would cover it. And the pursuit of justice in a city like Seattle, in the case of Cam Higby's assault, would be swift, right? That's the hypothetical that I gave last week when railing on the non-coverage of what's going on. But in truth, I didn't have to give you a hypothetical because that exact situation has already played out before in the state of Washington. And I'm going to take you blow by blow for how it was covered and how it was prosecuted when it did happen. So back on January 6th, 2021, when, of course, the riot was happening at the nation's capital, there was also a group of far-right extremists who tried to lay siege upon the governor's mansion in Olympia. And I condemned this at the time. I was a mainstream journalist at the time, but they were breaching the walls. Jay Inslee and his wife Trudy had to hide in a closet inside the governor's mansion, which was a horrible ordeal. Leave Trudy out of it. Trudy didn't do anything wrong. And then outside, there were some militants who were open carrying, which at the time was lawful on the state campus. And they unleashed bear spray on members of the media and threatened to kill members of the media who were outside, including a McClatchy reporter named Sarah Gensler. And she caught this quick clip of video.
Get the f*** out!
Get out of here!
We're serious! Get the f*** out!
Don't touch us, and this is the public legislature.
You want to f***?
So that's a quick clip, but there was other coverage of it as well, where that individual, who I'll talk about momentarily, who was a Trump supporter, obviously far right, militant extremist, threatening, went on to threaten that if the reporters didn't leave, he would kill them. And there were also reporters who were there sprayed with what I believe was bear spray. Now, at the time when that happened to Sarah Gensler and some other mainstream journalists who were down covering this siege on the governor's mansion, obviously a lot was going on. I remember being on the desk that day. We were covering breaking news of what was happening in the nation's capital and then also monitoring what was happening in Olympia. But it was immediately a big deal. You know, here we have journalists who are under assault. And I had just gotten off of 6 months of being assaulted and mobbed and threatened during the summer of 2020. So I looked back at my posts and messages from the time, and I already knew I was morally consistent because I know I am a morally consistent human being. And I immediately tweeted out about it, asking Sarah if she was okay. That's horrible what happened. I sent her a private message. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Do you guys have a good, you know, still image of the guy who attacked you so we can get that out there and we can have people be on the lookout for them? So it was a very obvious, easy thing to condemn. But when you look at, Nicole, will you play again the assault on Cam and I?
No, no, no.
And now play the clip that McClatchy reporter Sarah Gensler captured in 2021.
Get the f*** out!
Get out of here!
We're serious! Get the f*** out!
Don't touch us, and this is the public legislature.
You want to f***?
Realistically, do you see a big difference? You know, because those reporters were assaulted too. It wasn't in that video clip. They were threatened with death. To me, if I watch those clips, I see violent extremists threatening members of the media. So what unfolded in 2021 and what unfolded last week with us, really perpetrators cut from the same cloth, and something worthy of condemnation, whether it happened then or happened now. But what do you think the key difference is? How the media covered it, of course. I pulled just a few of the headlines that emerged after that mainstream journalist and journalists down there were assaulted and threatened. Every local news station, covered the attack on those journalists down in Olympia by a right-wing mob of extremists. Every single one. I mean, it even made the New York Times. And in the days that followed, there were calls for justice. There were op-eds pushed out, waxing poetic about the need to protect this fundamental part of American life, journalism. This was from the News Tribune. The headline, this is 3 days after it happened. Get the F out. No way. Washington reporters are not cowed by Trump-worshipping thugs. And I mean, that was a Trump worshiping thug. Do you think they've ever referred to Antifa militants as thugs? Here's a couple paragraphs from this article the News Tribune wrote, this op-ed. During simultaneous uprisings of Donald Trump disciples in Washington, D.C. and Olympia on Wednesday, there was so much chilling evidence that our democratic institutions are under siege, it's hard to know where to start. For us, the one that naturally ranks at the top was the brazen assault on the free press, America's First Amendment birthright, especially after a member of our own news reporting team was confronted by an armed thug and threatened with physical harm on the state capitol grounds. This contemptible attack on Gensler, who covers state government for the News Tribune and the Olympian, brought home the ugliness that was unfolding on a much larger scale across the country. The full might of their newspaper, the full might of their printing press, condemning what they called an attack on the First Amendment by an armed thug. And I don't disagree with a word of it. At the time, I didn't disagree with the condemnation. I agreed that it was a horrible ordeal. I wanted the person who perpetrated it brought to justice. Seems interesting, though, when you compare it with the utter silence happening right now. As I mentioned, back in 2021, this made the New York Times. The New York Times headline, covering pro-Trump mobs, the news media became a target. Sarah Gensler, a reporter with the Olympian in Washington State, wrote on Twitter that she and another journalist had been accosted at a protest in Olympia by an armed man who told them that the news media were not welcome. He added that he had pepper sprayed other reporters earlier and said he would kill her and other journalists in the next year. Horrible. Absolutely worthy of the media coverage. But of course, a huge departure from the media coverage, the mainstream media coverage that is non-existent right now in the face of left-wing political violence against members of the media. And it wasn't as if the coverage of this was just for a couple days in the news back in 2021 and then it waned. No, 2 years later, the local Cascade PBS station, which at the time was called Crosscut, 2 full years later, published this breathless article. What happened after the January 6th confrontation in Olympia? Since the 2021 attack on the Capitol campus, security has increased. Two people have faced prosecution, and reporters continue to feel the shock. 2 years after it happened. Again, I'm not saying it's not worthy of that. I'm not saying that security didn't increase as a result of that or that it wasn't serious. But do you think that they were even writing articles like that about the shock that reporters were feeling about being assaulted during the 2020 riots? You know how many reporters were assaulted in 2020? And these news outlets didn't care about that. All of a sudden, mainstream journalists are accosted, threatened, something that happens to conservative journalists and members of the media in this country nonstop, especially those working on the West Coast. And every news station has a headline. It's in all the newscasts on TV. The New York Times picks it up. And they're running follow-ups about it 2 years later. There was this quote from that one. I don't have it for you, but I just had to read it because the way they were talking about it, again, in that Cascade PBS article. And just compare this, like, to their silence right now. Chris Loftus, director of communications for the Washington State Patrol, remembers that day well. I've never been prouder of these people who came together and said, look, there's a real and present danger to the people, the processes, and the places of democracy. We're going to step into that breach and create a line that you will not pass, talking about standing up to these right-wing, violent extremists. Shauna Sowersby, now a state government reporter from McClatchy, was a freelance reporter for Crosscut that day in Olympia. It was just such a scary day, Sowersby said. She remembered a moment that afternoon when someone armed with an assault rifle was speaking to the crowd and urging protesters to kill all the reporters there. That was probably the most terrifying moment, Sowersby remembered. And I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that it was very scary. Why don't I doubt it? Because I've been through it many times. But for some reason, when it happens to me or when it happens to someone like Cam Higby and when the perpetrators are not far right but far left, the media doesn't share these types of stories. They don't publish these sort of headlines. They don't look back 2 years later and think and interview people about how scary and horrible it was. Not even the five-year anniversary coverage of CHOP has looked back at it in a meaningful way to talk about the horror of that period of time. After I was attacked last weekend outside the Homeland Security office in Tukwila, if you had read the Seattle Times, you wouldn't even know what happened. Not only did they not cover it, they actively lied about it. Their piece, an ICE special response team and Tukwila police used tear gas on a crowd of about 150 people Saturday. Their whole article painted police and federal agents as the aggressors, as if this crowd was just there trying to support immigrants, and made no mention at all of a member of the media, me, being violently assaulted, even though the videos were out there widely. But of course, in the example I gave after 2021, the Seattle Times covered it when it was right-wing extremists attacking a member of the media and threatening a member of the media. And they didn't just cover it then. They covered it in the months that followed, as the individual responsible was ultimately prosecuted for that crime. Como News last week, after what happened to me. The only mention they made of it, there were no arrests and initially no reported injuries, but on Monday, the department said it's investigating reports of a woman at the protest who was sprayed in the eyes with a substance. That woman is me, right? But had it been a mainstream journalist who right-wingers sprayed in the eyes with a substance, you think they'd leave out the fact that they were a member of the media and that it was an attack on the First Amendment? Of course not. It's also different because of the consequences. Now, albeit I think the attack on Cam Higbee was far more severe, but he had the misfortune of being nearly beaten to death in the city of Seattle, where if you're a left-wing criminal, a rioter, you can get away with damn near anything. I reached out to the Seattle Police Department this morning. I said, has there been any progress in Cam Higbee's case? Because we know the name of the perpetrator. The name of the perpetrator is not in question. It's been out there for a week and 2 days. The attack is on camera. There's literally nothing from an evidentiary perspective that would stop police from going out to arrest that guy. Seattle police told me, so far, no. So they just told me a couple minutes ago. So far, no arrest. And so far, no charges that have been forwarded to prosecutors for consideration. So we're at 9 to 10 days since the attack happened. After this attack happened down in Olympia in 2021, the Washington State Patrol came out proudly a few days later, said arrest made in connection with January 6th protest at the Capitol campus. They arrested a guy named Damon Huseman. And within 3 months, not even 2 months, 2 months and a couple days, Damon Huseman was in front of a Thurston County judge being sentenced for the crime. 2 months it took. And he faced serious charges. When he was initially arrested by the state patrol, he was arrested for assault in the second degree, felony harassment, and criminal trespass. A judge gave him 6 months in jail. He had to spend 6 months, which in our state, I think is a pretty good sentence. 6 months in jail. I would ask, did he do anything more severe to those reporters than were done to Cam Higbee and I? No. I would say that they were trying to kill Cam Higbee. He was actually brutally assaulted. There's no question about who it is. Identity not in question. They know the name. They have the video. So far, nothing. And in fact, we've heard behind the scenes that city prosecutors really aren't eager or interested in pursuing misdemeanor assault cases when it arises from a protest or a riot. And do we really think that the King County Prosecutor's Office is going to turn this into a felony case, as they should, and go after the perpetrators who held Cam there and the one that beat him senseless in the head, so hit him so hard he had a concussion, and the guy left a fist print in Cam's helmet? That attack, from a brutality standpoint, is inarguably far worse than what happened in 2020. Took 2 months, took a couple days to get into custody. The police department in 2021 to release information, celebrate the arrest. The Seattle Times followed it every step of the way, as did other mainstream outlets, put the guy's face out there. And within 2 months, he was in front of a judge being sentenced and got 6 months in jail for it. And we can't even get police to arrest this guy that beat Cam. even though we know exactly who he is. Those are the receipts. Like, what else does anyone need to see the moral hypocrisy of this moment? And like, I'm not perfect, but I knew the second that I went to do this story today that I remembered calling out the violence against those mainstream journalists. Sharing the picture of the suspect so that they could find him. Because right-wing violence, bad, bad, bad. Left-wing violence against people who they think are right-wing, well, that's perfectly fine. We'll all just look the other way. Absolutely insane. All right, coming up next, so we mentioned all this violence and vandalism outside the federal building. Well, a group of volunteers tried to step up to clean the horrible graffiti off that building, and they were told to stand down. We'll have that story next. First, are you confident in the makeup of your retirement portfolio? As the market has had these crazy shifts, have you been losing your mind with dread? Well, if that's the case, you could probably use a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital can help you with that. This is what Zach and his team specialize in. They specialize in managing risk. I mean, risk is always part of the equation, of course, but you only get one retirement. You want to make sure that it's properly protected against risk, that you've got the right allocations to weather this particular moment in history and between the tariffs or whatever the hell is going to happen with Iran and Israel, all of that. So reach out to our friend Zach Abraham, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule one right now. Don't put it off. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. So we already knew that it's pretty easy to go destroy things in the city of Seattle if you set your mind to it. And you also know that there probably won't be many consequences for doing so as long as you're like on the left, right? As long as your graffiti is targeting people on the right, they're going to be just fine with it. But what I didn't know is that volunteering to clean up graffiti would be made so darn hard by the government. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do that. So let's just start with a reset here. Of course, the federal building in downtown Seattle. This is my video from, what, 2 weekends ago? I think 2 weeks ago, of all the destruction outside that building. Like, I mean, penis drawings, F-ice, ACAB, all cops are bastards, like all Gestapo, all measure of violent words, curse words, like I said, phallic artwork. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. And this had been going on for several nights, not to mention all the Lime scooters and Lime bikes that they threw about trying to block the building and all of that stuff. So it was trashed, absolutely, utterly trashed. And then there's another protest, and then people are outside, and then I was down there the other day, and it was all still there. And not just on the windows out front of the federal building, but all along, all around the building, the whole block, every entrance, every exit, on the brick, on the concrete, on the sidewalks, on the windows. Days and days and days go by, and it's still there. And it never should have been allowed to happen in the first place. I mean, these rioters were allowed to take over these buildings, to block entrances and exits with no punishments really whatsoever. But don't you think, I mean, there's a beautiful hotel kitty corner from here. There's great, from there, there's great restaurants. When I was down there covering the riotous behavior, there were tourists walking around asking me what's going on. So this is the heart of the city. Don't you think everyone would be a little bit more eager to clean it up? If not for that reason, that the fact that, you know, this is the heart of the city, we've got tourists coming and going, people walk by here on their way to the stadium, all of those reasons, but also it's like the broken windows theory. Kind of makes it easier for the militants to come back and keep vandalizing the building. It's already vandalized anyway. What's one more? What's one more can of spray paint? Days go by, nothing happens. So Andrea Suarez and her team at We Heart Seattle decide they were on their way. They, of course, do these volunteer litter pickups of homeless encampments that the city of Seattle just allows to fester. So they were on their way to a cleanup, and they decided that they were going to stop with their graffiti removal team and pitch in.
down here on our day off treating this brick with some solvent that's safe for the brick. And we're down here with some We Heart Seattle volunteers. I don't know where Mark is, but it's early and I'm on the way to my litter pick. But you think we're going to be able to get a lot of this done today?
Yeah.
Is it safe for old brick?
Yeah. Yeah. This is what the city uses.
And they do this all the time. Because when they volunteer to go out and clean up these parks, etc., they often have to also spend an awful lot of time removing graffiti. So they have what the city uses to remove graffiti to make sure that it's not harmful or erosive to the brick. And of course, the windows, you know, wiping those off. So only the government would do this. And I don't even think I can blame the city of Seattle for the, well, I can blame them for the fact that this was allowed to happen in the first place. But our friend Jonathan Cho's down there. And he's covering Andrea Suarez and her team deciding to step in and like, hey, we're going to beautify the city. We're going to help out federal agents. I mean, there's all this stuff, F-ICE, like killing cops, all this. We want this gone. This is the right thing to do. And as Jonathan Cho is there reporting on it, the federal government comes in and tells Andrea to stop.
Lenient, permissive, do nothing, hands off, hot leadership. It's just harms all of us.
About to knock this shit out, bro. You love something, you don't tear it up. Go do this shit somewhere else, man. You know what I mean?
Yay! This makes me so happy.
Shit, I love Seattle. I'm from Seattle. I'm pretty sure a lot of these people from Antifa probably are not even from the city.
And you're here to defend the city.
Yes, you damn right. With everything I got.
We just do what we do. We clean up the city. And Billy and Derek are seasoned graffiti abatement crew that we sometimes call on, and it's already been treated.
The city doesn't want to work with the federal because it's the federal system. The federal doesn't like the city, but the citizens are the ones that pay for it, not the politicians. The politicians are at home asleep, right?
And we've been reported.
So you're telling me right now, you let Antifa vandalize a federal building, but you won't let a citizen clean it up? That doesn't make any sense.
The feds, or whoever these security people are, coming out and blocking us, and they don't do anything about the militants. We then got approached by the security guard again, and I was handed a phone that had a federal officer on the line, and he ordered me to stop doing what I was doing because that it was a historic building. I then said, well, what about all the graffiti and the curse words and the damages and the broken windows? And he said, you know, I appreciate what you're doing, but I'm ordering you to stop.
Oh my, only the government. Now, look, I'm trying to put my reasonable cap on. Historic building. Are these people cleaning it in the way that it needs to be cleaned? You've had like 2 weeks to clean it. The city of Seattle has had weeks to say, hey, this building, it might be a federal building, but it's sitting in our city in a high traffic area with all these curse words and slurs and all of these like death to police officers. So we're going to step in. We're going to work with the feds to get a crew in here to clean this place up. They all had time to do it. And they didn't do it. You're telling me it's worse for the federal building? For experienced graffiti removal individuals with the right equipment to come there and clean it up than it is to let it all sit there and soak in? Only the government. Only the government. God, it's easy to, you know, vandalize things. Very hard to clean it up, apparently. Even if you have people who are willing to step up and do it for free. So I don't know. Maybe you tell me. Maybe Andrea Suarez and We Heart Seattle should have contacted the federal building beforehand, should have let them know, here's the material we have, here's the way that we do this, this is the same thing the city of Seattle has done, we're welcome, you know, to come in, we're hoping to come in, we'll do it for free, we'll donate all of our time, our volunteers will do this. Maybe the federal building would have acquiesced and let them help out. But I guarantee what's going to happen now. It's the government, right? They'll remove the graffiti, but they'll do it for about 10,000 times the cost that Andrea Suarez and her team were willing to do it for. Absolutely insane. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, maybe you're moving to the other side of the state for some sanity, or maybe you're moving even further than that. I saw the gas prices in Idaho again this weekend. Gosh, it really is a big flag freedom over there. I love it. I don't want you to leave, but if you do, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. He's been doing this for a long time. He's been through the market ups and downs. He knows what your home needs to be able to sell for top dollar. That's what we all want. At the end of the day, it's like put up or shut up. I need the most possible money out of my home. How are you going to help me do that? I encourage you asking a few real estate agents that exact question. But I think once you hear Wes Jones's answer and what he and his team have to offer from a marketing perspective, their Listing Boost concierge service, their market analysis, I think you're going to find that Wes Jones and his team are the ones to go with right now to sell your home. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It simply is a better way to sell your home. All right, Bob Ferguson found yet another reason to go after Donald Trump, saying the Trump administration has denied federal disaster relief after Washington State's bomb cyclone that happened late last year. The only problem is Governor Ferguson is conveniently leaving out the fact that his own political party denied it too. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Okay. So you all remember the bomb cyclone, of course, which I will say was a significant weather event. I'm not downplaying the significance of the bomb cyclone. And that's when all the trees were down, all the power. How long was power out? Like a week? Absolute disaster. So it happened.
It took us off the air.
Oh, that's right. It took us off the air. Well, as we found out today, a lot of things take us off the air, apparently.
It happens.
But the it was November, right? November of just last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So who was the president November last year?
Well, that would be Biden.
Biden was the president.
Or the auto pen.
Gotcha, the auto pen. So this happens, and Washington State wants help from FEMA, from the federal government. Like, hey, this is a pretty significant disaster. The zone for it's pretty large. We need some help. Apparently, Biden was busy with other things, or the auto pen just didn't get around to it, and he ended up leaving it for President Donald Trump and the Trump administration to figure out. So Biden didn't even act on it. I mean, was Bob Ferguson mad at Biden? No, he's mad at Donald Trump, because the Trump administration has now not once but twice denied federal disaster relief assistance to Washington State to deal with some of the infrastructure damage that was caused during the bomb cyclone. And look, there are requirements for both things. So it's not as if a state just goes to the federal government and the government says, we had a significant disaster, give us money, they just have to give it to them. No, there's a bunch of different requirements, extent of the damage, you know, what has the state done to try to deal with it on their own, state funding, all of these things. So it's within the federal government's ability to be able to come in and say, no, you guys are going to have to deal with this one on your own. Now, that doesn't mean that Bob Ferguson can't be mad about that. That doesn't mean that Bob Ferguson can't like really, really believe that this was such a severe disaster that the federal government should have sent funds in. But of course, the problem comes in with the hypocrisy of it, because right now, Bob Ferguson is absolutely railing against the Trump administration for not doing anything while ignoring some other people who didn't do anything either, which I'll get to in a moment. But he said on X, the Trump administration has doubled down on its refusal to stand by Washington communities working to recover from the bomb cyclone last fall. They still refuse to explain their outrageous decision. My team and I are working to exhaust every possible avenue to get additional support for our state's recovery. President Trump has made it clear he has no intention to use our federal tax dollars to provide disaster relief. We cannot count on the Trump administration to uphold its responsibilities to Washington. Interesting. So he says, my team and I are working to exhaust every possible avenue to get additional support for our state's recovery. Well, is one of those avenues you exhausted asking your own political party in Olympia why they also rejected money to help with the bomb cyclone? Because they did. So in just this budget conversation that was going on, there was a House Bill 1473, that had to do more broadly with disaster funding. And that's something every budget is going to require. And there's a ton of different types of disasters that the state might have to at any given time respond to. A lot of them storm related, when we have severe weather, flooding out on the coast, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got to make sure you have some sort of allocation in the state budget to be able to deal with that. So there was a specific section that was added into House Bill 1473, disaster funding, specifically to respond to and pick up the pieces from the bomb cyclone. It would have allotted a sum of $8,500,000 from the budget stabilization account for the fiscal year ending June 2025, provided solely for grants to local governments for costs related to disaster response and recovery incurred by local governments in countless impacted areas by the bomb cyclone weather event. So $8,500,000, the lawmakers were considering putting into the state's budget for disaster funding. Okay, what happened? They changed their minds. They rejected it. They decided that it wasn't serious enough or severe enough and didn't warrant that allocation of $8,500,000. So they rejected it entirely. Was Bob Ferguson up in arms about it? No, he signed the budget. He signed the budget without the money in there to continue to pick up the pieces from the bomb cyclone. And then, because he's hopelessly ideological and his whole shtick in life is just orange man bad, now he's railing against the federal government and the Trump administration for not coming in to help, despite the fact the bomb cyclone happened under the watch of President Biden. And the auto pen apparently didn't get around to sending us help then. So now it's fast forward and it's Trump's fault, not Biden's fault. It's Trump's fault, not the Democrat-controlled legislature that decided at the last minute it wasn't going to allocate $8,500,000 to pick up the pieces from the bomb cyclone. Yeah, Bob Ferguson, tell me again how it's Donald Trump's fault. Absolutely asinine. This guy is so easy to disprove his talking points. It's just ridiculous. All right, we've got a lot of national news to get to coming up next. First, I keep telling you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. We all need insurance. Why not let somebody else deal with it? And also have that person make sure you have the best insurance at the best price and you're not paying for something you don't need. Or, I would argue just as bad, you're underinsured in the event that the unthinkable happens, like a bomb cyclone. See what I did there? God forbid. Jacob Miller, undivided listener, said, "Hey, Brandy, my wife and I live in Spokane." He said, "I'm writing because we recently changed our insurance over to your awesome sponsors at First Mark. They saved us $600 on our home and $2,000 a year for our family's cars. They were honest and easy to work with. My wife even knew our agent's mother from the past. You rock." He says, "I apologize for the length, but we appreciate your efforts." That wasn't a long email at all. You can send me as long as emails as you want if it's about the wonderful folks over at First Mark Insurance. So we hear this all the time from undivided viewers and listeners. Usually we hear them say something like, "Gosh, I'd wish I'd done that sooner." And then they come back and tell us the thousands of dollars that they saved every year simply by taking the First Mark Challenge. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. It only takes a little bit of time and it can pay dividends, quite literally. All right, some national news. Like, look, I know a lot of people are talking about what's going on in Iran. I don't think one single person watching or listening to this show comes to it for my acumen on foreign affairs. So I'll spare you my thoughts really on what's happening in Iran and the president's decision to bomb its nuclear facilities. I am not an expert on that. And there's really no insight that I can offer you that you haven't already seen on the national outlets. I will say though, I'm very good at calling out just dumb stuff. And the LA Sheriff's post has to be the craziest response I've ever seen to anything. So Trump decides that they're going to bomb these nuclear facilities. This from the official LA County Sheriff's account. "Our hearts go out to the victims and families impacted by the recent bombings in Iran. While this tragic event occurred overseas, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department is closely monitoring the situation. While this tragic event alongside our local, state, and federal partners." And then they go on to say, "There's no known threats to Los Angeles. Out of an abundance of caution, we're increasing patrol checks at places of worship and other sensitive locations throughout the county. If you see something, say something." So the last half of that is just fine. In fact, you saw law enforcement agencies across the country basically saying, "We're on high alert." There is a concern, of course, because you have had an open border for many years, and we know that there are Iranian terror cells within the United States. So there's, of course, a concern that they could retaliate in some way. So especially for major cities, you're going to be on the lookout for infrastructure, large gatherings, all those things. So perfectly appropriate for the LA County Sheriff's Office to say, "We're on high alert. We don't know of any threats at this moment." But of course, it's the "our hearts go out to the victims impacted by the recent bombings in Iran," calling it a tragic event. I have my theories on this, but they did send out an apology because everybody was like, and they deleted it pretty quick. And then everybody's like, "But you have to explain what happened here." They just said, we're issuing this statement to formally apologize for an offensive and inappropriate social media post recently posted on our platforms, blah, blah, blah. We fully recognize that the words and messages we share carry weight, blah, blah, blah. We've updated our social media post and have launched an internal review to determine how it was created and published. Steps are being taken. Here's my theory. I know the theory that would play the best would be that it was some like left-wing nut job who took to social media. I think it was some pencil pusher, doesn't really understand global affairs and had AI write it.
Yeah, AI, I think it was, or it was AI. Like a copy paste from here. Tragedy, post this.
I think it was something like that.
Edit.
I tend to think, because it's so bad, it was less nefarious than stupidity. Yeah. But I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm not saying the LA County Sheriff's Office probably doesn't have some left-wing ideologues in the building, maybe even running their social media account. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say it was some like horrible AI fail. Let me know what you think. All right. This is two great stories that have a tie to Washington State. And gosh, I'm just so happy to hear this. So, of course, you remember during the pandemic, the former coach for the WSU Cougs, Rolovich, was fired because he wouldn't take the COVID-19 vaccine. And he wouldn't give in. He's like, I'm not taking it because of my religious beliefs. They literally fired the coach of the Cougars. God, there's so many crazy things that happened during that time. So he has been in a constant legal battle, basically suing over this decision. And just yesterday, the Department of Justice and their civil rights division sent a letter on his behalf, basically. So they've signed on as sort of a supporter for his case in the lawsuit, saying laws that explicitly target religious practices, such as the saying that they believe that his religious rights should have been protected and that the federal government sides with him in its case against Washington State University and the state of Washington. So, and they wrote a very succinct little argument about it, basically that they failed to prove that the decision they made was reasonable and should take precedent over his religious rights, et cetera. So that's a good thing that the federal government is getting involved in that. The federal government also getting involved today, worth noting. I know a lot of you are interested in this. Federal government also deciding that they are going to sue over the law that was passed in Washington State, Senate Bill 5375, that they say unconstitutionally forces Catholic priests in Washington to choose between their obligations to the Catholic Church and their penitence or face criminal consequences. So, of course, that law, basically what it said is if you've got like someone who comes into a confessional and confesses to child abuse, that that priest then has to report that, so violating the sanctity of the confessional. And I've said I have mixed feelings about this. I'm not a religious person, and so forgive me, but I think that if you come into a confessional and you confess to sexually abusing a child, that I do think there ought to be some sort of obligation to report in some form or fashion. I understand a lot of you will disagree with me on that, but Harmeet Dhillon, who's the Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division, I just read part of what she said, but she said laws that explicitly target religious practices such as the sacrament of confession in the Catholic Church have no place in our society. And I do understand that. Look, I get it. I understand both arguments in this case and the arguments that Catholics are making and the sanctity of the confessional. And if you feel like you can't fully confess your sins because they're bound by laws and they might report you, then you might not be able to be free to practice your religion. So I certainly understand that. But now the Department of Justice getting involved in that. And I think that's a good thing. Like, let's sort it out in court, right? One more thing I want to talk about, because it is the subject of our daily subscriber show poll. This from KHOU11 in Texas. Governor Greg Abbott down in Texas has signed a law requiring 10 commandments be displayed in all public school classrooms. Good Lord. So it says the state will require public elementary and secondary schools display the 10 commandments in every classroom starting with the 2025-2026 school year. The new law mandates that all public schools hang a durable poster or framed copy of the Ten Commandments in a conspicuous place in each classroom. The displays must be at least 16 inches wide and 20 inches tall, using text large enough to be read by someone with average vision from anywhere in the classroom. Very specific. I guess to like stop them from printing it on a 2-inch by 3-inch piece of paper and putting it in a desk drawer or something. I don't know. I love that it has that thing though. It has to be large enough, the text, to be read by someone with average vision from anywhere in the classroom. You guys already know how I feel about this, but I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you agree with a new Texas law requiring schools post the Ten Commandments in classrooms? Nicole, do you have this?
Yes, sorry.
No, that's okay.
There you go. I was going to answer.
Oh, cart before the horse. Yeah. Yes or no?
I'm going to say I do not agree with it. Again, separation of church and state, and we try to be consistent around here.
Right, because then what's next, right? Are you going to put like some, you know, right. Muslim prayer or something up in a room, and where right. does it stop? And what about the Satanists who they want their pentagram or whatever the hell it is? And so it's just like that. This is the same reason I was opposed to the coach, even though I like him very much, the praying coach on the 50-yard line, because there's a slippery slope here. I am kind of scared to look at what you guys think about this, because sometimes I'm like, God, please tell me I've taught them well. Although you can think for yourselves, that's fine too. Most of you say you are opposed to this. Luke, however, said yes. He said, it's just too convenient that the left can push whatever it wants in public schools under the protection of the First Amendment, but displaying the Ten Commandments is unconstitutional. That's interesting, because you do have some of these sick and perverse twisted things that they're saying, First Amendment, you know, we can push our radical sex ideology on children, and that's fine, but you can't have your Ten Commandments in school. I get it, but again, think of what, I mean, even in Texas, how would they then try to argue against people who want to push something related to their religion in public classrooms? I don't know where that would end. Shadaw says separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. Even as a concept, the idea was designed to keep government out of the church, not to keep God out of politics. Still, I voted no. Our society has moved too far from where it was when that made sense. So posting them becomes a token on the one hand and a distraction on the other. Far better to put that energy towards school choice and let the market push the schools back toward teaching those values than to mandate some minuscule placard in the corner of the basement to check a compliance box. Yeah. Mark, there is a reason to separate church and state. Our founding fathers understood this. I tend to agree with that. And that's what a lot of people are citing. Big Swan, I like this too. Fine to post common sense tips for getting along with people, but not directly from the Bible or the Quran, etc. I like to refer to them as the golden rules, and I don't think 10 are needed. And that's the point. It's like, the 10 commandments are not... I gotta make sure I know all of them. How many can you name, Nicole? Do you think you can name them on command?
No, probably not.
God. Okay,
I just would second guess myself, for sure.
I mean, like...
Like, you, don't steal, don't steal. Cheat, love thy neighbor.
No adultery. Yeah, love thy neighbor.
Yes.
Thou shalt not kill one of them.
Yeah, do not kill. Yeah, yeah,
because then there's like, you shouldn't like worship false gods, right? Or false idols. So there's some of them that don't make a lot of sense in a school setting, but some of them are like, that's just good advice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't cheat on your wife one day or your husband.
The ones we don't probably kill wouldn't someone.
Get in. Yeah. So, I was trying to Google it, but I... Some people are going to be like, you guys suck. You don't know the Ten Commandments. Listen, Nicole doesn't have an excuse, actually. I'm the one who has an excuse. Well, you shall have no other gods before me. So that would obviously be problematic in a school. You shall make no idols, which actually you could kind of, you know, kids should have good role models, right? You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain.
Good role models, but maybe not to worship.
Keep the Sabbath day holy. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. All you COVID snitches. Yeah. You shall not covet. Oh, covet. Yes, that was a good one. So some of those rewritten in the sort of the golden rule form would be just fine. I don't think you need the Ten Commandments in school.
I think you could come up with your own like Texas commandments and then say, here, kids, abide by these. And they can be fairly similar. But
yeah,
maybe,
but not church.
Yes. Churchish. Leave God out of it. For this purpose, for this sign purpose.
Yes. Stacy, well, I agree with the Ten Commandments. They are a religious element and do not belong in public schools. Yeah. 100%. And E says, we have religious schools for parents that want to send their kids there. Right. So if religion as part of education is very important for you, there are options for that as well. All right. Good stuff there. Good stuff. So we have a new, Miranda has an expanded role at Undivided. In addition to doing Florida Report every week, she's now going to be managing our live chat and our comments. So Nicole can focus on the show. Miranda's going to be in there. She's going to be keeping you all in line, and she's going to be choosing the comments that air on the show every day. So thank you, Miranda. Very excited for that. So if you see her in there, she's also going to take a very conservative approach to comment moderation. Only the real horrible of the horrible-ish trolls who are hurting everyone else's experience in the live chat will be put in timeout. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. Kathy Carr on Seattle activists moving from one issue to the next. It's amazing how quickly they came up with these professionally made signs, right? It's like that's why I think it's just in the corner of their basement, you know, room in their parents' house. They've got it all lined up.
Oh, yeah.
Who could I possibly have to maybe side with today? And they were ready, and they had the Iranian flag ready or the bandana. They're like, let's do it. Greg Anderson, leftists are brave enough when they confront individuals or those weaker than they are, but are cowards when confronting anyone who has approximately the same force or determination to stop them. Can I share what I got? I don't know if they wanted to. I told them I'd do a free ad for them on the show, but they said that's not really why they did it. I got sent so many weapons. Less lethal weapons. Yeah, I found it's legal. Don't worry. I confirmed the legality of it. But I'll see if this company, I wanted to give them a shout out because it was very, very nice. But until they say, self-defense tools, until they say that I can, I won't say who. I got a taser, like the one that shoots prongs. It also like has a, I mean, I've been playing with these all weekend, has a function where you can just do it at close range. I got this taser stick kind of thing. It's like a flashlight, but it doubles as a taser. And then it also has these jagged edges where you can just stab someone with it. Speaking of stabbing, I got a knife. I just got all this stuff. I got some pepper spray. So I'm ready, okay?
Yeah.
I'm ready. Of course, only in self-defense. And but
are you going back out then?
Well, look, I don't think I would even bring that stuff back out with me because I don't think my security guard would like me to be armed in addition to him being armed because he'd probably want to decide when we use what. Mm-hmm. But I will say I'm going to start for sure immediately sleeping with the little shooty taser next to my bed. Shooty taser. Clearly, I'm going to be very competent in using these things. But I've said this, you guys, this isn't a surprise to anyone. They've been posting my home address all over the place. All over the place, nonstop. They were reciting it from memory at some of these riots. And so, but that's kind of a constant part of our life. Like, we've already, police where I live are already kind of familiar with that. So, but I'll tell you what, come in, you're going to get the lightning. Zip, zip. So I'm excited about that. So it was very nice. I'll have to give them a shout out if they're okay with it. But all right, Fed's building more cases against Antifa in Portland. She Wilk says, I was watching a video of a bus offloading a bunch of protesters with signs for a protest today. They were very upset about being filmed, as they always are. Paid protesters? Yeah, I think some of them are absolutely paid protesters. Some of them are just absolutely nuts. Mm-hmm. On our interview with Police Union President Mike Solon, Steve says, this morning's news said Seattle PD is staffed at about half of what it should be. After listening to Mike's comments about being Antifa confrontations and knowing how the Seattle City Council threw the SPD under the bus during 2020, is it any wonder officers don't want to work in Seattle, regardless of pay? I agree. And as I said at the end of my interview with Mike on Sunday's show, there's no amount of money that's worth your life and your dignity. Like, you might be willing to sacrifice your dignity for a little bit for a nice paycheck, but ultimately that's going to wear on you as a human being. And that's why we've seen so many officers leave. On our segment about glaring media hypocrisy, Matthew Cook says leadership will try their best to not have charges to discourage people reporting the actual events. They don't want people like Brandy, Cam, Cho, and Davis Court covering this. Yeah, and they just know that it's, those are conservatives. So, like, what, we deserve to be assaulted? It's really not that hard to be morally consistent.
It's not. And it's also think they give you the independent reporter thing. That's another reason. And, again, times have changed, and we're all trying to figure it out. But right. you've got to figure it out better than that.
But let's also say, like, she's not a member of the media. She's not a real reporter, right? And I don't claim to be a journalist. I am a reporter, and I am a member of the media. There's a lot of different types of people in media that are still protected by a free press and the First Amendment and part of that ecosystem. And I don't have to revisit that argument with all of you, but like the Como article that says they're looking into reports a woman was sprayed. Now, I'm not going to get too like, I mean, my head's huge already physically, but like, come on, people know who I am.
Yeah.
That's the dumbest thing to say, a woman, because there's clear connotations that it's me that was attacked.
Well, and I just think that it's important to say somebody trying to cover it, right? So whether you're trying to cover it for your school newspaper or your Undivided or whoever it is, but somebody trying to document them was sprayed in the eye with bug spray.
Yeah.
Not just,
like,
you know,
a passerby.
Or
right?
or not just like a fight between themselves or a fight with the HSI or whatever it is, you know. They can be more specific than that. That was crazy and ridiculous.
Just crazy. Mm-hmm. On We Heart Seattle being stopped from cleaning up the federal building. This is funny. Hello Watermelon says, is it a union thing? Graffiti cleaners local 235, LOL. Maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised that they have to go by a system, right? Like the bureaucracy in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it. So 100%. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird that's a historic building because it looks just like a crappy like 90s regular government run-of-the-mill building. But
well, it's probably before the 90s.
Okay. It just doesn't, it's ugly. Why is it a historic building? But I get it that, like, if you have someone who doesn't know how to clean up graffiti and then they're just like ruining windows and stuff like that, I do understand. It's just crazy that they couldn't have figured it out before Andrea had to step in and help. Like, that should have been cleaned off the next day. You know, if not for any other reason than to show, like, we're not going to tolerate this, right?
I do wonder if that's a Fed thing, if it's a state thing, if it's a city
thing. Oh, that was clearly a Fed
thing.
I can only blame the Feds for that. But the city should have stepped in and said, how can we help you? This is in the middle of Seattle.
Okay, that's comical.
Well, I know, but at the same time, it's in a busy area.
The city supports it.
One of the most expensive hotels in the city is across the street from there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is an area people are walking to and from. Don't you think they'd be very eager, given how bad it looks and how, like, disgusting the comments are written all over the building, that they'd be more eager to get it cleaned up?
The city? No. The Feds,
crazy.
Yes.
Crazy. Just insane.
They've proven they don't care. They don't care if they're down there creating that and, you know, disrupting tourists that are trying to walk by or drive their car through. So, no, I don't think the city has any problem with it. I think the Feds, it's surprising to me, but I think they have a lot on their plate right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. After refusing to fund cyclone relief, Bob's mad at Trump. Cynthia Martin, $2 super chat. Otto Penn was busy signing pardons for family and friends. Trump signs a lot of pardons too, but yes, point taken. Elemental Dino, I delivered in that area and a lot of trees are still down. Oh, still down from a bomb cyclone? Well, we had that one that blew up on the corner over here.
Right.
And it's just never been the same, obviously. But it's just like still, it's a really sad looking stump.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think that I think they're upset about is a reimbursement, but I also, I'm sure that there's stuff that still needs to be done. I'm not sure that the Feds are going to help with that much, but.
Yeah, and not every weather event warrants FEMA.
And to be clear, King County did provide its own funding. Like, King County tried to fund it and then just needed the state to step in. The state didn't step in. And so the state, like, tried to bypass their own. It seems to me the state tried to bypass their own responsibility and went straight to the Feds. So the county, the cities and the county all did their part. State skipped.
And again, if they hadn't got themselves in a budget crunch in the first place, it would have been easy to allocate money for the bomb cyclone. So it's the fault of Democrats. Let's just be clear here.
It's very
That now that they know that Miranda's in charge of choosing comments, Denise Young with a $5 super chat, bribe for Miranda.
Bribe,
so you'll choose comments from Denise more often. Sharelle Johnston, it's soothing to me listening to your common sense. These things need to be said. MSM in WAW is distressful. Well, I appreciate that. I aim to be soothing and pleasing. Robert Lawson, I wouldn't let my neighbor's dog go into downtown Seattle. And I hate my neighbor's dog.
It might be my favorite comment of the day. But why do you hate
hate your neighbor's dog? It's never the dog's fault. It's always the owner's fault. So maybe who you really hate is your
neighbor.
Bad
parenting.
Yeah. Maybe who you really hate is your neighbor. I should have pulled this picture for today, but I want a third dog, like, really bad. And so whenever my friends need a dog sitter, I'm like, please let me watch your dog. So I actually like it. I think they think that I'm just being nice. No, I actually want to watch your dog. So I'll watch some of our friends' dogs for weeks on end. And so we have our neighbor's dog, Junie, with us. And she's just so cute. I don't even know if she's like a poodle or something like that. Serial killer. She is a serial killer of stuffies, stuffed toys. So I went to Home Goods, where if you've never, like, sometimes those like stuffed animals for dogs, if you go to a pet store, they're like $25.
Right.
No, you go to Home Goods, it's like $5.
Right.
So I got this big, like, more than I could carry. And our that living is room is a crime scene.
You have to be careful.
There's octopus legs over here. There's the eye of a cow over here. It's little heart's been just bifurcated and just it's really something terrible. Else.
You have to be careful. Sometimes they ingest some of that and it'll back them up.
No, so but it depends on the dogs. This is an old dog, and they let their dog chew on stuffies. So like our dog Mac. Mm-hmm. She'll start to eat some of it, so she doesn't get the stuffies.
Got it.
But Lucky will just pack it around. She'll just,
it's like her little emotional support.
We had this one
animal
that was like, it was like, I swear, 3 or 4 feet long, and a bunch of little beep beep squeakers in it, right? And it was given to them by the neighbor kids, who the dogs love. Lucky packed that thing around for months,
so
just, and it drags on the floor, and she steps on it, and she's just, and then I think actually June last time she was over killed it. So killed That's Lucky's little toy.
I mean, you're gonna make me tell a crazy cat lady story, but my cat actually has 2 stuffies that he's had since he was a kitten, and I tried to take them away because I thought that maybe I could replace them with better ones because they get pretty dirty. Gross.
Yeah.
And no, he only wants the giraffe and the gorilla. That's all. And when he gets mad at me and tries to like bite me or whatever, if I close the door or whatever, he goes for the stuffing, takes out his aggression on the jugular. It's very interesting.
There's better, my crazy better cat on you, story better of the on day. That than you. Yes. All right. Good comments, Miranda. Thank you for your first day of comment content moderation. You be nice to the people in the comments, okay? All right. What am I doing now? Oh, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? I love, love, love this. First of all, I'm starting to really like U.S. Congressman Wesley Hunt, a Republican from Texas. He's just great. So I started following him on social media. I think he's a voice of sanity, up and coming in the party. But he brought up something that maybe I've been guilty of in the past and sort of painting the pushback against radical gender ideology as like a culture war issue. And I don't think that gives it enough credit because, for instance, this issue that now the Supreme Court ruled on when it comes to a law out of Tennessee of surgical mutilation of kids who believe that they were born in the wrong body. It's not a culture war issue. This is an issue fundamentally that's a litmus test of whether someone is sane and has morals. Here's what he said on Bill Maher.
The states can restrict minors from transitioning. They were just saying the states have the right to regulate this. Thoughts?
So this is a sanity check. If you can't tell the difference between a man and a woman, then what happens is I don't want to hear your other argument because it's just that simple. If you don't think that biological men should not compete against biological women, if you can't say that's not a good idea, that's ridiculous. Correct. We saw the issue with Riley Gaines and Simone Biles. We saw that debate go unfold and Simone got destroyed on this because, again, this is a sanity check. We had a Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown, that was asked, can you tell me the difference between a man and a woman? And she said, I'm not a doctor. This is a sanity check. If you can't answer that basic question, then how can you possibly tell me about policy? And this is one of the reasons why the Democrats are losing on an issue like this. I have a 6'4" and 2-year-old. My 6- and 4-year-old, they think that they're Anna and Elsa, and my little boy thinks he's Lightning McQueen. Mm-hmm. By the time you're 18 years old, if you want to change your body, you can live and do whatever you want as long as you want to pay for it. I fought for the right for you to be able to do that. But when we are talking about children and undeveloped human beings and allowing them to make decisions that are going to impact the rest of their life, we must protect them.
Amen. Should not be controversial. And it is a sanity check. It is a litmus test as to whether you are fit to be making policy in the United States of America. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We do appreciate it. Let's see. Big thank you to all of our paid subscribers who help make the show possible. If you'd like to be one of them and help support our work, it's just $5 a month. So you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And then you just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it super easy. Couple clicks, you're there. Bam, bam. And then you're supporting good independent work. I think it's good. I mean, you know, you can judge for yourself. But if you're watching it, either you're hate binging it or you think it's good too. All right. I will see you guys tomorrow at noon. It will be noon tomorrow. Nicole's like, I don't know. Possible.
Don't jinx us.
All right. Already jinxed.